Hi there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Moorhead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Rowan County Judge Executive Harry Clark. Thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Well, good morning, Leanne. We're always glad to be here with you.
It's been a busy week here in Rowan County. There's been a lot to celebrate. First, App Harvest held their ribbon cutting on Wednesday, and they anticipate to hire around 300 people out there. And that's going to impact the county in a positive way. It's several different ways. I guess we've kind of been talking about it for a couple years now and kind of anticipating it coming. And now that it's finally here, I wanted to see what are we going to see immediately here in the county that's going to affect the residents here?
Well, I think the first thing you'll see is, of course, that's about $115 million investment with, like you said, 300 jobs. And those are good paying jobs that you can live here and raise a family here. And that's what our goal has been all along, is that we don't want you to leave. We want you to stay here. And so I think you'll start seeing that. I know that they have already started hiring. They're going to start their, I don't know what you call it. I don't know if it's planning or exactly how they do that, but that's going to be happening here soon. I know they got some folks that will be starting or already working there. And I think it's really exciting for the community, because not only will it bolster us as the ag tech capital of the world, but it will also bring other industry here that will follow this App Harvest, this big greenhouse here. And I think it's really exciting for not only for Round County, but it's exciting for this region. And it's actually really exciting for Kentucky, because this really will define us as the ag tech capital of the world. And we're really looking forward to it and excited.
I hop on Facebook usually when I get up in the morning and kind of scroll through and see how things are going. And I noticed last week, I think there were some pictures that people were like, is there a fire? Is there a pipe explosion? And it turned out that App Harvest had just tested the lights early in the morning before the sun had come up. And there has been some concern in the community about light pollution, but you had said before that those are some concerns that are being addressed pretty quickly.
They are, and what happened the other day or the other morning, they actually turned the lights on without the side curtains down. There's side curtains that comes down to reflect the light back into the building. So they had those up, and they were just testing the lights. So that really stirred some activity within the county. It's the first time they had actually seen that. Also, I haven't got the details on it, but those lights will not be on all night. I don't believe they're going to be on. It may be hours that we're probably asleep anyway. But I think when they put the curtains down and do the other things, I think I'm certainly not here to tell you there's not going to be some light out there, but I don't think it will be quite what you seen the other night.
I think that, in the future, obviously not right now because we're in the middle of a global pandemic, but in the future, we're going to see some tourism related to that facility and the barrel making facility that's going to be across the street. What is the county anticipating doing anything specific to increase tourism to those particular businesses, or is that something that they're talking about in-house there?
Well, I think, it's part of their business model to have tourism in their 60-acre greenhouse. And then, of course, the cooperage, just by nature, people likes to go to the cooperage and see the barrels made. And I'm not real familiar with their business model. I know initially they had also planned on a business model to include some tourism. But at the end of the day, what we really need to do is be able to promote that as tourism, since now we are a city-county tourism. So now we can actually promote that out in the county, which is a benefit to being a joint venture. And we need to promote those things in tourism. And of course, Joy Brown does an excellent job of doing that for us. I think we'll see a rise in tourism. App Harvest, in conjunction with some input from the county, the state, I believe they're going to put bicycle racks out there and bus stops out there. So that'll kind of promote some mass transit, if you will. Maybe we'll be able to use buses instead of everybody driving a car out there. So there's a lot of good things coming out of this. It's a very positive investment for the people in Round County and the region.
And speaking of positive things for the region, there is a county was awarded a USDA grant, and free money is always a good news in anybody's pocketbook. So tell me a little bit about what that grant is going to be used for in the county.
The USDA grant that we received, I guess you're referring to for the ambulance service that we received yesterday, Miss Hilda Legg from the director of Kentucky USDA came yesterday and provided us with a check for $38,500 that we had applied for to assist us with remounting one of our ambulances. And so she came and delivered that to us yesterday. That's always exciting. You know, there's always paperwork involved. There's the grants, or they don't just come and hand them to you. You have to work for them. And I'll have to say my hat's off to Michelle Jesse, our county treasurer. She's really familiar with grant applications, and she's worked very hard on that. And but that's how that came to fruition, was the hard work of Michelle Jesse and the rest of the staff. And so they came, gave us $38,500. And, you know, that is going to be a new ambulance that's going to have a little higher technical stuff that, you know, that our citizens need and deserve. So we'll be able to provide that emergency service out in the county a little quicker and maybe a little more efficient with the new ambulance. And we continue to look at upgrading each year, another ambulance, maybe two, so we can stay up with what we need for emergency services.
Now, the fiscal court is trying to do the new ambulances where it kind of just pops out the back and slides into a new truck if necessary. It's like I think of it like Lego pieces. but that's something that the long term plan for those will be able to continue, like have a continual cost savings while still upgrading each year.
Yes, and that plan went into effect a number of years ago. Actually, I was a magistrate when we passed that, and we bought the boxes that you could reuse if you were, for I guess a better term. So what they do is they'll take the box off of one of our old ambulances, and they'll completely get it up to code. If there's any changes, any safety changes, they'll completely redo the inside of it. It's like a brand new box. So then they purchase a brand new truck that it goes on with just the old rails with no bed on it. And so they slide that box on, hook it all together. And so we've got a brand new truck with a brand new box, essentially. And that, there's a significant cost savings in that. It's about $150,000 for that ambulance if you go buy it with the box already on it. Mm-hmm. And in our case, it'll be about $110,000. So we're saving about $40,000 probably plus in the future. On each ambulance. So, you know, that's taxpayer money, and we're very conscious, try to do our very best to not spend it unwisely.
Well, since we're talking about ambulance trucks, let's talk about the house they're going in, the new ambulance service building. Where are we on that project right now?
Well, those walls are coming up. Of course, they're inside the building that they have to, we have to make it, I keep calling it the bunker. We got to get the bunker up so that we can get our ambulances in case a tornado of Category 5 comes ripping through. We'll have ambulances, but it's coming along very well. I anticipate we'll be moving into that in 1 January and moving out of the old ambulance service and hopefully into that one about 1 January. That's my target. I don't see anything really that'll slow us up. If anything, we may get in a little earlier, but I'm still going to stick with 1 January and hope we can do that.
Well, fingers crossed on that one.
Yes.
Now, the main thing on everyone's mind for the last 7 months, obviously, has been the coronavirus. Round County did have a red designation the last time we spoke, but the numbers have gone back down again. And the school district opened in-person classes this week for some of the students. And about 65% of students are expected to go back on Monday. What are you anticipating is going to happen as more people are exposed to each other on a daily basis?
Well, you know, it's no secret that our numbers are going up in the state. And when the numbers go up in the state, of course, you know, Round County is not isolated. So I expect our numbers to go up. I just hope we do it, be able to manage that. And the way to manage these numbers, absolutely, is just put the mask on. I mean, it's proven over and over. And I said this in my fiscal court meeting, and I don't want to offend anyone, but, you know, people say it violates our constitutional rights. And people say it's a hoax, and people say it doesn't work. I don't care how you describe the system. At the end of the day, every decision is made on the number of positive cases. So if you wear the mask and we keep the case manageable, we'll be able to send our kids back to school. and will be able to still continue a reduced amount of restaurant space and reduced bar space and the things that we're living with now that we're, you know, that's it's a strain, but we're getting there. So I guess at the end of the day, we need to forget about this big stance that we're on, and let's get on the same bandwagon here, and let's wear our masks, keep it down if we don't do anything else. If you don't believe it, let's keep the positive numbers down so our kids can return to school. They really need to return to school.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
Since 1993, Rowan County Christmas has provided seniors and low-income families with food vouchers and gifts for Christmas. Applications are now accepted at Peggy's Place in the Moorhead City Park, weekdays from 10 a.m. through 4 p.m. until November 25th. Applicants need to bring a photo ID, proof of residence in Rowan County, and proof of income for all members of the household. Facial coverings and social distancing are followed for health and safety. More information by calling 606-356-1661.
And we're back here on Open Mic here at Moorhead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Rowan County Judge Executive Harry Clark. Harry, thanks again for being here. We're talking about the numbers from COVID. The county has gone down from the red designation that it received a couple weeks ago, and the numbers are coming back down. I know that a big concern earlier this fall was the Moorhead State University students coming back into town and how there were going to be so many more people in the community. But worst case scenario, didn't happen.
It didn't, Leanne. And, you know, our hats off to the students and the faculty at MSU. They are a very small percentage of the cases that's positive in Rowan County. I looked at it some time ago and they were down around probably about 11%. I'm going to say it's even less than that now simply because we've had a lot of positive cases and they've not been in with MSU. So, you know, hats off to those young folks for keeping things in check and allowing the university to continue. You know, we've got 329 cases since the beginning in Rowan County. And I know there's a little bit of discussion on the difference between the state code and the code that I put out or the fiscal court puts out each evening. And that is because we operate in real time. You know, we get those numbers that day and we update our chart, our graph. So you'll see the state may be orange, we may be yellow. You may see the state probably is rolling around pretty close to reflecting the yellow that we did just that one day. So they may reflect yellow, we'll still be orange. So I just want to make sure everybody understood that. These numbers are coming from fiscal court and from our webpage and our Facebook page are actual daily reported numbers. And that is a tremendous help to the schools. Allowing them to continue and doing the things they do.
I know that day-to-day information is going to become even more important as schools are back in session starting Monday because, you know, one case at one school could mean a quarantine of the entire population of that school or perhaps the whole district. It's going to kind of want to be one of those wait-and-see kind of things that we have to adjust to on a daily basis.
Just like everything else in COVID, we're going to change our minds several times on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah. Now, the fiscal court actually met in regular session earlier this week, and the group did have some reports. First of all, emergency management, obviously that's one of the most important ones considering we're, you know, navigating this global pandemic.
It is, and you know, everything that Jim Hampton says is important, but probably the biggest piece of that puzzle that we had in that report is they are putting together a plan for the immunizations for COVID when the vaccine is released. So they're actually got a plan. They've already got it together on how that'll work. So we will just hope that vaccine comes soon. But that's really the biggest input he had for the meeting, other than, you know, everything he does is important, but that was very significant.
The fiscal court spent a lot of time discussing the sheriff's bonding and budget for the year. Are there going to be any changes to that department's budget or any big differences from previous years?
No, not really. There was about a $42,000 difference in the budget, but that is more essentially just the cost of things have gone up. administrative fees, all those kind of things. So it's really pretty close to just kind of remaining on target. Nothing real big, flashy that they're asking for. So it's pretty much standard.
The clerk audit was also discussed for the county clerk. I know that office was closed for some of the pandemic. The renewal of car tags was suspended. People didn't have to do that for a while because of COVID. Coming in to pay property taxes was suspended. So I wondered if we were already seeing in this audit, if we are seeing the effects of COVID on that particular office.
No, not really. The audit really wouldn't pick up on that. That would be, what they returned to us in excess fees here pretty soon. But I'll tell you, Elwoods did a good job with that. And my hat's off to the audit. The audit was a very clean audit. And when you have that many pieces of the puzzle, it's like the fiscal court audit, Michelle Jesse, there's a lot of pieces of this puzzle that has to be done. Christy Bailey does an excellent job for Elwood, for the clerk. But it was a clean audit. The funding that comes through, we did see a slowdown of that because they had deferred all of the truck tags and all of those things. But those are coming back and rolling back in. And, they don't dodge it forever. So, okay, we had a little dry spell for a little while, but that money will eventually get to us. So I don't see anything really big in that part of it for us, the clerk's fees.
I know Elwood has been hard at work recently because in-person early voting has started for the election that's coming up very shortly. And I guess really that's kind of been his focus for now and will continue to do so. But voter turnout in Rowan County has been pretty high so far.
It has been a really good turnout, and I think people here know that your ballot is safe. They're not buying into this. Oh my gosh, we're going to throw them all in the garbage. That is garbage. The ballots are safe. The clerks take extra caution to make sure that every ballot is counted. And I went over and looked at this facility over at Carl Perkins Center. It's just humming right along, and they're doing a good job. And people are comfortable with it. They're comfortable with voting. And there's some going to wait and come in on the last day of vote because that's just what they want to do. And that's fine. They'll be able to handle that. But hats off to the people come in early vote or do it by mail. It's just working very well. And the county clerk, Elwood's done a good job with it.
I've been surprised by seeing the numbers because I think the last time I looked, it was like 37% voter turnout, which is about where it was when we had the gubernatorial election last year, that around 35-37% was the turnout. And usually in election years for the presidential election, there usually is a bigger turnout. But even to see already... to see 37% have shown up already is just really surprising to me.
It is. And that's a good thing. So we've still got a while to go before the election. I know you probably never watched TV or none, but I do believe they announced this morning, which is a rarity, but I think they said it's about 12 days to go. I say, well, our turnout will be very high this time.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how that all turns out. I know I'll probably see you down at the courthouse that night. We'll be reporting live from the courthouse with the numbers for here in Rowan County, and the entire world's going to be watching because it is very important election this time. Now, here in the county, there's usually events that kick off in September, and it seems like every weekend there's things that are happening. And of course, the majority of those things have been suspended because of the pandemic. Is there anything coming up that's going to be that's of interest that people are going to be able to participate in that you wanted to touch base on?
I really can't say that there is, and I hate and reluctantly say that, but even if we had a plan today to do something with these numbers increasing, And us staying in the Orange range, it's just hard to even consider doing something. I know the mayor and I, we bantered back and forth trying to figure out what we could do, you know, for Christmas. What could we do? See, we're not going to have our county city Christmas dinner this year. So we beat ourselves up over this, and there's just really nothing we can do that will prevent that would be, you know, decent to do for families and our community that wouldn't potentially spread COVID. So no, I just don't really, I regret to say it, but I just don't really have any real good news that we're going to be able to do anything.
I think people in the community are getting that COVID fatigue. We're all having trouble, you know, seasonal depression is kicking in and we're not able to go out and hang out with our friends. And, you know, it's not safe to have large family gatherings even. The governor said earlier this week to try to limit in-person gatherings again as the numbers in Kentucky are going up. And I think people are having a tough time. But we all just kind of have to hunker down and do the best we can and get through this.
It is, and it's really hard. I mean, you know, we're all human. We, you know, we're used to the way we do things. You know, back in February, we didn't know anything about COVID. Now, all of a sudden, you know, since March, we've been kind of put on restriction, kind of sent to a room and have to stay in a room. So, you know, it is difficult. It's difficult for me. I mean, I'm used to doing a lot of different things that I do, you know, a lot of meetings, a lot of stuff with the family, and we just hadn't been able to do it. So at the end of the day, I think it's without a doubt, it's just a sacrifice that we're all going to have to make. And we have to think that the folks that came before us made much greater sacrifices than we're having to do. And, you know, and I think you need to remind yourself of that occasionally. You know, the John McCain's that spent 7 years in the POW camp in Vietnam, the folks in World War II that stormed those beaches and stayed, you know, in the freezing cold in the winter with no shoes and, you know, no socks. All those people came before us. They sacrificed a lot. And so we just have to bring ourselves back to think about that. And don't think about it too long because I don't want you to stay home and get depressed. But reality, we just have to be a little tougher, and gain that from our ancestors and really step up to it. And let's get through this at the end of the day. And next year we'll have a vaccine and we'll be back to normal sometime.
And on that note, that's all the time we have here on Open Mic. Round County Judge Executive Harry Clark, I really appreciate you spending time with us today.
Thank you, Leanne, for having us. It's always good to update the community.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Moorhead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.